This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, verses number 29 and 30, recited by Saeed Maliki.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قُلْ إِن تُخْفُوا مَا فِي صُدُورِكُمْ أَوْ تُبْدُوهُ يَعْلَمْهُ اللَّهُ وَيَعْلَمُ مَا فِي السماوات وما في الأرض والله على كل شيء يوم تجد كل نفس ما عملت من خير محضرا وما ويحذركم الله نفسه والله رؤوف بالعباد صدق
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the merciful. Say, whether you hide what is in your heart or manifest it, Allah knows it, and He knows whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth, and Allah has power over all things. On the day that every soul shall find present what it has done of good and what it has done of evil, it shall wish that between it and that evil there were a long duration of time. And Allah makes you to be cautious of retribution from Himself, and Allah is compassionate to the servants.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Top stories this hour. In the U.S., Democrats retain control of the Senate, while the outcome of the vote in the House of Representatives still hangs in the balance. Germany facing a cost of living crisis. Thousands of people marched through Berlin calling for government control of food prices. Also, Ethiopia's government and Tigrayan rebels agreed to facilitate aid deliveries to Tigray days after the two sides signed a deal to end hostilities. Hello and welcome. We are coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. In the U.S., Democrats retain control of the Senate as vote counting comes to an end in the deeply divided state of Nevada following Tuesday's midterm elections. Incumbent Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto managed to defeat Republican Adam Laxalt. The Republican challenger was endorsed by former President Donald Trump, winning the margin of 50 out of the Senate's 100 seats. Along with another seat already allocated to U.S. Vice President, the chamber is now in control of Democrats. In the race for the House, however, it is still unknown which party will hold a majority. Having already won 211 out of 435 seats, Republicans are ahead of Democrats. But returns are still flowing in several states, including California, which will possibly give Democrats a chance to win the majority. Colin Campbell, our correspondent in Washington, D.C., is with us right now. Colin, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us. So give us an update and tell us what the chances are for the Democrats to win the majority in the House.
Well, right now, Republicans, of course, are looking like they'll still hold on to the lead, even though numbers are still coming in from states like California. We did get a late win in the state of Colorado with one of the senators winning over there. And so right now it was tied. So what the current president was looking at was a majority in both houses. But what happened was just this afternoon, we had the announcement that there would be a lead coming from Democrats in the Senate. So now we're looking at the House. Right now, Republicans hold the lead, but we're still getting numbers coming in that could indicate that the Republicans may hold on to the House. And if they did, it would mean that they would set the agenda largely for any type of political legislation that would be coming along throughout Congress. They would kind of set the pace. They would be the one kind of dictate what the topics were that would be discussed and to be voted on. However, if the Republicans do lose the House, if the Democrats manage to hold on to it, that would give Biden a very clear mandate almost to really continue with his agenda, considering he had very low approval numbers and he is fighting rising inflation, rising prices across the board, and still did not manage to lose both houses. It's really unprecedented because usually the party that is in power loses many seats in the midterm election, which could may not happen with the current president if Democrats hold on to the House.
Well, and when would we know the results?
Well, it may not be for several days. We have still a lot of counting going on. This could take a little bit of time because of the fact that it's so close. We're talking margins that may be within 1 or 2%, and that could take some time to count out all those votes. And then, even on top of that, if there is a declaration of a winner, the loser, depending on the margin of victory or the margin of loss, rather, could say or could ask for a recount because of the fact that there is so little disparity between both numbers. So we have to just be patient, hold on, and wait until that final count is over and see if when the dust clears, if there's a clear winner, and if the loser of that election agrees with the outcome.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. That was Colin Campbell, our correspondent in Washington, D.C. Moving on, European cities once again witnessing protests against high inflation and rising food prices as the cost of living crisis continues to bite. We have a report.
Consumer prices have climbed at a record pace in Europe in recent months. Food, fuel, rent, and home heating prices have been spiraling upwards as rising inflation, caused in part by the war in Ukraine, is behind a wave of protests that underscores growing discontent among European citizens. On Saturday, the Albanian capital became the scene of a scuffle between police and protesters demonstrating against the rising cost of living in the Balkan country. The demonstration turned violent after the protesters broke police line and spread red paint on main doors of government building. The Albanian government has introduced some measures for fiscal relief. People, however, do not find that enough to alleviate the rising cost of living. Similarly, thousands of people marched through the German capital, calling for food prices to be controlled and for the rich to face higher taxes. The protesters also criticized Germany's economic system for putting profits over people's needs, describing as bleak the future for younger generations.
Young people have no future. In the crisis we are in the inflation, we can't afford kebabs anymore. We don't know how to pay for our food. We have no possibility at all to move out in the next few years. We will have to live with our parents for at least another 5 years because we can't afford our own flat.
Inflation in Germany is at its highest level in more than 70 years, and government policies have failed to tackle the soaring prices. Some experts blame the effects of the ongoing war in Ukraine.
Nobody's really been acting rationally or concerned with peace or the possibility of nuclear war. The Ukraine and Russia, those are major food-growing areas and commodity-growing areas. And, that has to clear up. And we need to get back on the path of peace and sound money.
The European Union has imposed waves of sanctions against Russia since Moscow began what it called a special military operation. While the bloc blames Moscow for the energy crunch, its sanctions on Russia appears to backfire as inflation is forecast to stay high for longer than what was initially anticipated, with the poorest feeling the pain the most.
The Ukrainian president says Russian forces destroyed the critical infrastructure in the southern city of Kherson before pulling out from the area.
As of this evening, the defense forces have established control in more than 60 settlements of Kherson region. The police have also started stabilization measures. Stabilization measures are also ongoing in Kherson. Our explosive experts have a lot of work everywhere in the free territory. Almost 2,000 explosive items have already been removed. Mines, tripwires, unexploded ammunition. Before fleeing from Kherson, the occupiers destroyed all critical infrastructure, communications, supply of water, heat, and electricity.
Zelensky said extremely fierce fighting is now going on in Donetsk region in east of Ukraine. Russia's military ordered to pull out of Kherson on Thursday. Russia's commander in Ukraine said it was no longer possible to keep supplying the city. Kherson was one of the four regions in Ukraine that Moscow annexed in September. Earlier, our correspondent Johnny Miller, who is covering the war in Ukraine, gave us more details regarding the situation in Kherson. Take a listen.
I think it's important to point out that it may be very dangerous for any pro-Russians still left in the city. Russia has made a point of evacuating over recent weeks pro-Russian civilians outside Kherson. They've learned the lessons in what happened in Kharkov a couple of months ago, where there were reports of pro-Russians being killed by Ukrainian soldiers when they took over the region. I've just watched a very gruesome video of which purports to be Ukrainian soldiers executing a Russian soldier with a hammer. Obviously, there's many Ukrainian soldiers who've lost their lives trying to take back Kherson. The vengeful nature of soldiers on the front line is well documented in warfare. And also, there's a huge hatred of Russians now in Ukraine. So there's a fear, and I've seen another video of mistreatment of someone who is said to be a pro-Russian, captured by Ukrainian soldiers in Kherson, being mistreated. So anybody who's said to be or accused of being pro-Russians might be in a very difficult situation in Kherson right now. We also expect many Western media outlets to come into Kherson soon. Ukraine says that they are documenting Russian abuses of power there. So there is a fear also there might be a propaganda campaign in Kherson to stir up more hatred of Russia, which will, of course, promote more war in Ukraine rather than promote both sides going to the negotiating table.
A newly announced peace deal between parties of the Ethiopian civil war seems to make further headways. Now both sides agree to lay out a roadmap for its implementation. Both sides say they are committed to its implementation as the only way to restore peace and stability. The peace deal was signed between the Ethiopian government and Tigrayan forces earlier this month. It halted a two-year conflict that has killed thousands and displaced millions in the Horn of Africa country. The truce will boost efforts to resume much-needed aid delivery to the northern Tigray region. Although the peace deal is a major breakthrough, it is received with some degree of caution. This is not the first ceasefire in the conflict. A previous one was breached in August, just months after both sides committed to it. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have placed emphasis on deepening political and economic cooperation. The Kremlin says the two leaders discussed a number of issues on bilateral agenda. The two also stressed advancing cooperation in the political, trade, and economic fields, including the transport and logistics sector. The phone conversation came shortly after a senior Russian security official met with Iranian officials in Tehran, where the two countries pledged closer ties. The Iranian foreign minister has warned the UN Human Rights Council against attempts to organize a special session on the recent riots in Iran. He says if that's going to be the case, Iran's cooperation with the West will be negatively affected.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran. He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran.
Human rights has turned into a weapon against countries that are an inconvenience for the West to deal with. Implementing sanctions is the other side of that same coin. Together, they form the West's policy in dealing with non-conforming nations.
Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the U.S. cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this. The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights. He also added, the U.S. has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere. Perhaps he was referring to the role that the U.S. has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on U.S.'s destabilizing acts in the region. The U.K.'s involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups, and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
Yemen is facing an acute shortage of medical supplies as the Saudi-led coalition is impeding all sorts of imports by continuing its blockade on the country. Abdullatif Al-Washili reports from Sana'a.
The Yemeni Ministry of Health and Population held a press conference in Sana'a to highlight the impact of the continued Saudi siege on the national drug supply program. The event took place amid a severe shortage of necessary medication in the war-torn country.
The Saudi blockade imposed on the national drug supply program has caused one of the world's worst crises in the health sector. Medicines do not arrive on time at all due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport, which has also led to a high rate of death among people with chronic diseases. Patients can't receive basic drugs such as insulin for diabetics, and this is a tragedy no one talks about.
The ministry says almost 169,000 patients cannot receive life-saving medicine and they are in real danger unless the siege is lifted.
The pharmaceutical system in Yemen has been gripped by the Saudi blockade. International companies have partially or completely left the Yemeni market as they face extra costs as well as seizure of vessels for weeks and months. Moreover, medicines should be delivered in special conditions to maintain their quality and effectiveness. The fuel crisis has also negatively affected the shipment of medication.
Earlier, the member of the National Negotiating Delegation, Abdulmalik Al-Ajri, accused Western powers of preventing the entry of medical supplies into Yemen, saying this precedent has never been witnessed throughout history.
Officials believe that Saudi Arabia is deliberately preventing medical supplies from entering Yemen to pressure Sana'a to accept the UN agreement as it is. They say the siege has failed throughout 7 years of the war, and the kingdom's measures will push the Yemeni army to carry out new air strikes. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
in the limelight.
In Britain, there are clear signs of recession, with gross domestic product estimated to have fallen by 0.6% in the month of September. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Sun has more for us. In Britain, the economy shrunk by 0.2% between July and September, new figures have revealed, as experts warn the country is heading for recession. The Office for National Statistics said that gross domestic product, or GDP, had fallen by 0.6% in September. Gross domestic product, or GDP, measures the value of goods and services produced in the United Kingdom. It also estimates the size of and growth in the economy. The Office of National Statistics said the figures may have been affected by the bank holiday for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. This is because some businesses closed or operated shorter hours for the day as a mark of respect. It could be the beginning of a recession, which is defined as two quarters of shrinking gross domestic product GDP in a row. But in the last quarter, April to June, the economy grew unexpectedly by 0.2%. This means the economy would need to shrink again in the next quarter for the country to formally enter a recession. Manufacturing was also down in the 3 months to September. Office for National Statistics Director of Economic Statistics, Darren Morgan, said, "With September showing a notable fall partly due to the effects of the additional bank holiday for the Queen's funeral, overall economy shrank slightly in the third quarter. The quarterly fall was driven by manufacturing, which saw widespread declines across most industries. Services were flat overall, but consumer-facing industries fared badly, with a notable fall in retail." Today's figures come just a week after the Bank of England warned that the United Kingdom could be facing the longest recession in the past 100 years. However, the Bank of England itself cautioned that this would only happen if it raises interest rates to around 5.2%, which the market was expecting at the time. But it doesn't expect interest rates to reach such a high level now, which would imply that the recession could be less drawn out. Responding to the figures, Chancellor Jeremy Hunt said, "There is a tough road ahead that will require extremely difficult decisions." Hunt said, "To achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books, and get debt falling. There is no other way." While the world economy faces extreme turbulence, the fundamental resilience of the British economy is cause for optimism in the long run. In less than a week, Jeremy Hunt will unveil the government's autumn statement, a budget that will have huge implications for your pocket. The Bank of England uses gross domestic product as one of the key indicators when it sets the base interest rate. Last week, it unveiled the biggest interest rate rise since the 1980s, increasing interest rates to 3%. The hike is usually passed on to consumers in the form of higher interest rates on mortgages and other borrowing. Savers could earn more on the cash they have in their accounts, though banks are usually slower to pass on a rate increase on savings. Alice Hain, personal finance analyst at Best Invest, said, "As we head into winter and a potentially long drawn-out recession, consumers are right to be fearful of bleak times ahead." She added, "Food inflation rose by 14.6% on the year to September, while those remortgaging now are facing monthly repayments hundreds of pounds higher. A scaled-back Christmas will be crucial for those whose budgets are already squeezed to the max." The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. Britain's economy contracted during the third quarter as it shrank more than expected in September, suggesting the country has entered what is forecast to be a prolonged recession. Gross domestic product, or GDP, fell 0.6% between August and September, the Office for National Statistics said on Friday. A larger drop than the 0.4% forecast by economists polled by the Reuters news agency. Output fell 0.2% between the second and third quarters, the first such contraction in more than a year. Economists had expected shrinkage of 0.5%. Britain's economy is now 0.2% smaller than it was in February of 2020, immediately prior to the COVID pandemic. Other major economies, including the United States, Germany and France, have grown above pre-pandemic levels. Sanjay Raja, economist at Deutsche Bank, said the UK gross domestic product contraction in the third quarter was a result of continued weakness in household and business confidence, higher inflation and higher interest rates in the economy. The Bank of England last week forecast that the third quarter would be the start of a long recession lasting up to 2 years, as a central bank raises interest rates to curb high inflation. The latest gross domestic product figures provided a difficult backdrop to next week's autumn statement, in which the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, is expected to tighten fiscal policy despite the economic downturn. Jeremy Hunt is considering tax rises and public spending cuts worth up to £55 billion a year to try to fill a gaping hole in the public finances and restore financial markets' confidence in the UK after Liz Truss's ill-fated premiership. Her mini-budget involved £45 billion of unfunded tax cuts, most of which Jeremy Hunt has pledged to reverse after Liz Truss's plans roiled the markets. Jeremy Hunt said, "I'm under no illusion that there is a tough road ahead, one which will require extremely difficult decisions to restore confidence and economic stability. But to achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books and get debt falling. There is no other way."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Fragrance of the companion shall take a nation to the companion. Sometimes childhood memories appear before my eyes like a pale pall of imagination. Among those rippling images there sails the craft of my thought towards the shore of silence, to anchor in the harbor of its own. I dwell on my existence. I want to decipher the Oriental thoughts and secrets, and to put an end to my bewilderment and self-alienation. I am a traveler, standing on the shore of thoughts. My aim, to pinpoint my lost identity. I am a traveler, walking on the road of human thoughts. My destination is the land of belief in oneself, in a bid to revive an identity which might no longer exist. It is an identity which, like a child's toy, is played with, but in a deadly way.
ये वो घर है जहाँ अल्लामा इकबाल 9 नवंबर 1877 को सुबह 5
Here is the very room wherein Iqbal was born on the 9th of November 1877 at 5:14 a.m.
इस घर की इब्तिदा की 6 फरवरी 1861
The house here was built by his grandfather Sheikh Muhammad Rafiq. He was the first to occupy the house. On the 6th of February, 1861, he bought 3 small rooms and a house near here until Iqbal was born. Later, Iqbal's elder brother came here. The house has undergone no change since then.
Then Muhammad Iqbal went to Punjab University, one of Pakistan's oldest universities, established in 1882 by the British ruler of the Indian subcontinent in Lahore. There, the instruction language was English, though some lessons were taught in Urdu.
Shairi ke mukhtalif adwar hain.
Allama's poetry consists of certain periods.
His poetry was at first as the poetry of the day. He would say at that time, my Urdu poems are like a building made of clay. Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with What Can Be Done, O Eastern People.
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture, is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to 3 intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these 3 intellectual domains: Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western thoughts domain.
There are 3 groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings.
Mr. Hafiz.
From among them, we can name Hafiz and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafiz and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings, meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, "There is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein."
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems, and such verified stories as the Souvenir of Hijaz, the Eastern Message, the Familiar Secrets, and the Mysteries of Rapture, he talks about the principles of internal ontology of things, an idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new worldview into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you?
Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, "To a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self."
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is, in fact, the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. This house, this quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly thoughts of self-belief, something much needed by all.
This house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native land's people. My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkali district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, Paul excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self he gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for himself, to train himself in a desirable way, to maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West.
Signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
Is ghar ki tamir hamari dadi ki khwahish pe ki gayi thi, par wo is ghar mein sirf
this house was built under my grandmother's wish. Unki yahan pe bimar but only for 2 or 3 days she lived here. She was sick when they carried her in a car, but she survived only for 2 or 3 days. At the age of 11, my father lost his mother when my aunt was about 6 years old. My father and my aunt would come here every day to see Allama, who was lying on this bed. Allama called them and my aunt would come up to Allama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed. This way Allama would feel comfortable.
I usually went to see them after school. Allama was always lying on his bed and resting. I was always beside him. Other people would also go there.
Many came here to see him. Among them, General Muhammad Ali Jinnah, Jawaharlal Nehru, Muhammad Ali Jauhar, and many other intimate friends of Allama. They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with Allama about topics like poetry, philosophy, or any other things. Allama spent his last days of life here.
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others. Self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness. Know yourself, know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is a secret of the self.
Iqbal's philosophy is objective and tangible. He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people. Iqbal's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy. It can be put into practice.
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book, the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self, the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts, though they are all against Islamic teachings. In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests, takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance in a way that leaves perplexed God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam that is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, a descendant of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too? The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The everlasting letter the familiar secrets, the secrets of rapture, the Persian Psalms, what can be done, O people of the East, the route of philosophy in Iran, the Eastern message, and reconstructing Islamic religious thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, "As Iran, full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution."
इसी तरह जब आखिरी रात थी अलामा साहब की तो वो दोनों बच्चे इसी दरवाजे पे आए.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them. My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Allama and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, "I will stay here at least for a while."
Allama told the tutor,
"She knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay.
She knows this is the last time she sees her father."
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Allama passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Allama passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Allama will come to this world several centuries later.
Allama Iqbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, "I have a pain here." And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Allama composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No, no, no. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No, no. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No, no, no. Allama's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
The Zionist regime forces continued their attacks against Palestinians. What is disappointing is the inaction from world community and the so-called defenders of human rights. In this regard, we have provided views from world media websites. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada had this headline, writing, "Why are Israel's cops a strategic partner for EU?" This website noted, "Supporters of the Israeli regime, believe it or not, get one or two things right. The constant claim that their beloved regime cherishes innovation contains a grain of truth. What other oppressive views Facebook and Twitter as such vital tools for alerting the world to its brutality?" On October 8, the Zionist regime police force effectively admitted that it was subjugating civilians en masse. The force posted photographs on the internet of its officers helping to seal off Shafat's refugee camp near Al-Quds. The Zionist regime presented the suffocation of Shafat as a response to the killing of an Israeli troop. Collective punishment is forbidden under the Geneva Conventions and other instruments of international law. Every time it resorts to collective punishment, the Zionist regime commits a war crime. Avoiding democratic oversight, the European Union has built a formal alliance with the Zionist regime's police. The EU even signed an accord on deepening ties with Israeli regime's police during September, just a few weeks before that force implicitly boasted of committing a war crime in Shafat camp. Though that accord, the Zionist regime can exchange personal data about Palestinians living under occupation with Europol, the EU's police agency. The deal was put together quite swiftly by EU standards. Negotiations aimed at sealing it kicked off in November 2021, around the same time that the talks opened.